This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
Welcome to episode 43 of the official Red Sox podcast, Inside the Monster, presented by Odyssey with myself, Steve Peralt, and Joey Capone. Today, we are joined by World Series champion Orlando Cabrera. It was an awesome interview. I had a ton of fun. I know you did too, Joey. How you doing, Joey?
I'm doing good, dude. Yeah, this was a ton of fun. I'm glad we got to do this. We should start like making a list of like 04 guys that we can start checking off.
I think at this point we got to get the whole team, right? Because like, shout out to Sarah with the Red Sox, who's been helping us out with getting the alumni guys. And I really think at this point, Joey and Nate, if you're listening, this might be a project for you, for us to make like a chart. Maybe it's like, you know, the outline of the field, like a picture of Fenway, and just have the heads at the positions. And if we've had them, I think the head is filled in. And if we haven't had him, it's faded. Does that make any sense?
I like that. Yeah.
All right. So, Nate, there's some homework assignment for you for this weekend. But I really think that's a good idea. We had the Timlin interview. We got Orlando Cabrera. I guess who else? It's just them so far, right? Because we had JD Drew, John Valentin. We got another 04 player, yeah, I believe, coming up.
Well, we haven't released the Manny interview yet, right?
Yeah, but we're going to wait until next year for that
one. Right. Okay, sorry. I don't know if I was supposed to say that.
No, you probably weren't, but like he said so many swears and he called out so many people.
I know. I can't believe he called out your brother like that. You think he's actually going to fight him?
Yeah, he had a lot of things to say about American Vandal and players. And I thought that was a little odd, but this was a great interview, Joey. I had a lot of fun. Yeah. It was some really good Montreal talk. I know Orlando played for the Expos there, played for the Expos in the last year of the Expos. I know we mentioned in the series preview for this Royals series, believe Greinke's the only pitcher. Anyone listening, let me know. Let me know if there's any other active MLB pitcher outside of Zach Greinke that has started a game against the Montreal Expos. I don't think there is, but let me know if there is. But a lot of good Montreal talk, a lot of good Red Sox talk, of course. You kind of forget, Joey, that Orlando Cabrera played like 60 games with the Red Sox.
I think it was less than that. Yeah, I think it was like 56, something like that.
I think 58 was the number, but then you add the playoff games, and it's like he basically played whatever, like 80 total games for the Red Sox, which is just, that's absurd. I would have said he played here like 2 years probably. I know obviously everyone knows the deadline. That was the thing that I obviously want to talk about the most. Nomar, you know, him replacing Nomar and how he took that, you know, what it meant to him that he was in Boston. He had to replace a guy that was the face of the team for a while along with Pedro. Mm-hmm. So he had a really cool answer to that.
The weight of being there for 04 that makes it feel like he was around longer because he's engraved in history here. You know, I have a t-shirt that has the 04 roster on. I wear his name on my back often.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah, he's just,
Think 04, you think of, well, that's also Orlando and Minkiewicz kind of stick out because, you know, you make the deal and then all of a sudden the Red Sox, I think, went 42-19 to end the season. And then they obviously win the World Series. So really good conversation with Orlando Cabrera. And we'll just jump right into it. So right after this break, hear from World Series champion and a great interview, a really great interview. Had a lot of time, a lot of fun doing this. Orlando Cabrera coming up next. All righty, we are joined by none other than World Series champion Orlando Cabrera. First off, Orlando, thank you for doing this, man. Really appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Absolutely. Joe, yeah. You had a question off the top here.
Yeah, I did. Orlando, any chance you still live in New Hampshire?
Yes, I was in Far Corners. I was playing, I think it's Haverhill. I just came by, picked my kid up from camp, and I live in Windham.
Nice. Yeah, I'm in Manchester, so not too far away. That's awesome. I love when people like make New Hampshire home. It's a great place.
Yes, awesome place. Awesome place. Peaceful. A lot of great friends around here. Great people.
Do you do traditional outdoorsy stuff? The hunting, the fishing, the camping, all that?
I do the hunting. I do the fishing. I do the fly fishing. I do, we go to the beach.
Oh, nice.
Beach, everything. Volleyball. We got volleyball. We play volleyball every Sunday in Hampton Beach.
Oh, nice. That's beautiful. Yeah.
You check all the boxes there. That's good. A couple New Hampshire guys. Now I feel left out because I'm not from New Hampshire. But just kicking it off here, Orlando. Obviously, you started your career in 97 with the Montreal Expos. You ended up being the only player in Expos history to play all 162 twice, two separate seasons where you played every single game. How would you sum up your time in Montreal? And what's one specific memory maybe that sticks out more than the others?
Well, it wasn't one of the, best times, one of the best organizations. It was a lot of problems. Ownership was not as good as you want to get. But like the one things that I appreciate was that, we were playing with no pressure. We would not have been asking for a lot of things. I was able to establish myself in the big leagues without pressure, which is, if you play for the Red Sox, you're a rookie, you still have to produce. You have to put numbers. So I was able to establish myself without pressure and come up with a lot of good bunch of guys that have great careers during that time, with people that still, some of them I still keep in touch with.
Did you have one? Was there any specific moment during your playing time there that sticks out above the others? Because you were there, I believe, for 8 years of your career.
Yeah. I mean, what can I say? Probably, it was a game. It was one game, but we came up to, I think it was 2-0-3. We tied for first place in the wild card, and we were able to sweep the Phillies at home. During that time, I remember Tommy was in that team, Jimmy Rollins was that team. We took those guys out the first night that we played them, and we got them drunk in St. Catherine Street. I mean, that's one of the things that like I remember that we could, we were able to do in those times, because now you can't do stuff like that, especially to the other team. But it was good in Montreal, a lot of good memories in Canada.
Yeah, that is funny. I like that one right there. Real quick, I know we'll obviously jump right into the Red Sox here, but Do you think Montreal should get an MLB team back? I know there's been discussion about it. Like, what was your relationship like with the fans?
It was great. It was great. I just don't see it. You know, there's a lot of good fans out there. Don't get me wrong. But I don't think it's enough of the fans to, like, keep a major league team. In Montreal, I mean, I'm just talking numbers, basically. Yeah. And it's a lot of cities in the United States that can carry a team. So, but it would be nice for Montreal to have a team back there, maybe once in a while, or maybe half a season. You know, if somebody can split it like that way, could be fun. But yeah, I believe it's still a lot of good fans out there, but I don't think it's enough.
I know 2004 comes around. You're in the last year of your deal. What was the uncertainty like that the Expos were even going to be a team the next year? Like, I forget personally. I honestly almost forgot about the whole Expos, that the fact that you guys were even around in 2004. Exactly. You kind of forget about it because it's like, yeah, all I think about in 2004 is y'all winning the World Series. So what was the vibe like in Montreal and for you personally of whether the team was even going to be in town in 2005?
Well, yeah, no, the team would definitely not coming back to Montreal.
Yeah, yeah,
100%. There certainly was it Washington, was it Vegas, was it Puerto Rico? They didn't want to tell anybody at that time, and so for me, as you know, being a free agent, I know it was another 29 more teams. I'm like, I'm not flipping around just to be in the big leagues. I thought I was established already. I thought it was a great market for me in that year. And I always thought that, like, I was a player that a lot of teams wanted. I mean, maybe my ego was, you know, big enough for that, to think that way. And it happens, you know. I was able to get traded to the Red Sox and be in that particular moment at that particular time. With that great team, and we're able to win the World Series.
So what's your reaction when you get dealt to the Red Sox? Obviously, there's a lot going on there. That's a huge deal that happens, and we'll talk Nomar in a second. But when you initially find out it's Boston, what's going through your head?
Well, you know, you have to remember, it was a different times, right? Like right now, you get traded. You don't, you know, they're not telling you, oh, you're going to play third base. You're a third baseman, you're going to play third base. You get traded, they don't care. They can put you first, they can put you right. It doesn't matter. You know, back in those days, they really cemented that in your head that if you're a shortstop, always ask to play shortstop. If you're a third baseman, you always have to play third base. You know, so my reaction was, I was like, why would I'm getting traded to the Red Sox? They have one of the best shortstops in the league. So I didn't get it. And then like, so no, it's for Nomar Garcia-Parra. I'm like, what? So I'm like, they traded Nomar to Montreal? Like, what kind of deal is that? You know? And then like, no, it's a three-way trade, blah, blah, blah. And I was, you know, no social media in those days. I didn't even have a cell phone. And I know cell phones were around in those days and all that, but I was not that type of guy. So I was getting all the information through somebody, some people were telling me, and I couldn't believe it. I mean, I couldn't believe that I was, you know, traded to the Red Sox. I'm like, that's so far away from me. And I remember some of the guys when I got traded, you know, I got to Minnesota, and some of the guys like, hey, welcome to the big leagues. You know, like I was in AAA the whole time for 8 years. But which is true in some sense, you know, if you think about it, we didn't have a video person. We didn't have, you know, all the equipment and all the stuff that the Red Sox had, you know, just to help you beat the other team. We were doing everything from scratch, basically. Yeah. On your own sometimes, and you know, it was just a different team, a different league, if we got to say it that way.
Yeah, so you end up, obviously, like you mentioned, you take over basically for Nomar Garciaparra at shortstop, a guy that I, along with several other Red Sox fans, grew up idolizing. That was our hero. That celebrities forget about it. He was your hero too?
A guy.
I love hearing that. But when you find out, though, you find out that, oh, Nomar's gone, and wait, I'm now the shortstop.
Yeah.
When does it hit you, the magnitude of that, how much it matters that you're now the guy after Nomar Garciaparra, Red Sox and Boston icon? When did that kind of hit you?
Well, I kind of like play it down a lot, especially in my head every day. I played it down because I could never replace him, especially his offense. Never get even close to stuff like that. So I'm like, man, how am I going to do this? Like, how am I going to, like, because, you know, I play it down because I was like, you can never make these people forget about this guy. Never, never. I could never forget, you know, one of the best offensive shortstop I ever seen in my era. So I kind of was like, you know what? You play great defense. I 100% believe that they brought you here for the defense, not for the offense. But I know I can be an offensive player too, because I've been doing it in Montreal for years. So I'm like, just got to play my strength, what I can control, and I can control my defense. I can be lights out defensively, and I can help around me all these guys to be better defensively. And that's what I did. I just, you know, I told Francona, I was like, listen, I need to be the guy defensively. You got to let me do my thing. He goes, Orlando, I brought you here so you can captain all these guys defensively. If you see anything in the wrong place, if you see anything that they do that you don't like, be free to yell at them. And I did. I started, you know, Millar was one of the first ones. Millar, do this. Every time I want to see you doing this. If you're not doing it, I'm gonna whistle at you. I'm gonna yell at you in front of people. And they were so good at it. I mean, they took me in. They like, tell me when I'm wrong. Tell me when I'm doing something. Please help me. And that was it. You know, as soon as I start doing that stuff, everything stopped clicking, and the defense was there. The pitching staff was just so happy about it. They have somebody that can they can relate, because they couldn't do anything about it because it was just pitching. But they, you know, and they will feel secure. They were making pitches, and then we start winning series.
What was your first game at Fenway like? You know, I know you hit a homer in your first game with the Sox, but I mean, what was that change like going from playing in Montreal to your home ballpark being Fenway?
Well, one of my first memories, and I'm going to be very honest with you, was people yelling, we love you, we like you, we don't care what the papers say. And I'm like, man, what are the papers saying? Not done anything. You know, I'm like, I was struggling a little bit offensively, but we were winning series. We were winning series. And then Pedro goes, hey, listen, whatever you do, good or bad, even if you hit a home run to win that game, don't read that papers. Don't read any papers. You see your pitcher in there, just keep walking. Don't read anything. Just focus on what you're doing. We all been through all this stuff before. This is what you got to do. We got you back. And, I mean, I was just like, oh, my God. I mean, this is, like, really serious. I mean, we never had talks like that in Montreal. Never. Mm-hmm. Talks about, oh, do this and, like, we got three people in the media, four people. So half of them was reading in French, which I didn't understand, so I didn't care. But you get the people, you know, when people see you, when people, like, the way they take it, every game, they dare. Mm-hmm. You know, the stadium, you know, 35,000, 37,000. I'm like, oh, my God, this is every day. Every day, and they won that title. They want to win. They won the World Series. It's just like, it makes it so much interested, so much appreciated when you come to the park, because you will like, okay, I have all these people behind me. It's just like now you just put in numbers, you know. So it's nice.
Once the team got you and Minkiewicz, you go 42-19. So it was very clear that a difference was made defensively and offensively. I know you had mentioned it, but you deserve a lot of credit for what you were doing with the bat as well as with the glove. When did you know that you guys had something special going? Because I know 03 was obviously terrible. You weren't there, but of course that was a whole mess. When did you know in 04 after the deadline, when you end up in Boston, in that August and September stretch, like, oh, we might actually have a real thing going here?
So remember, the only time that we were close to talk about playoffs when I was in Montreal was with that time when we swept the Phillies. We were one game up in the wild card. Not even September. This is like end of August.
Yeah.
And what we did, we didn't have one person call up from AAA. That was the answer for them, for us to try to make to the playoffs. They said, "Well, we got to cut this out. We cannot let these people go to the playoffs." I don't know why they thought that way. So I had never for 8 years had that talk about going to the playoffs. So when I came here, everything was about who are we going to play? If we win the white card, who do we play? And I'm like, wow, that's all they talk about here. It's about who are we going to play? How are we going to play? Who's going to start that game? And for me, it was just like, man, this is like awesome. Awesome. I mean, all those fires that I have inside of me through my young career as a baseball player, I'm talking about before being a professional, came back. Because I've been a winner in every team since I was 9 years old. I've been winning every single title and every single team that I play for. Even in the minor leagues, I won in single A. I won in double A. I couldn't win in triple A because I only played for a month. But I won titles everywhere. Until I got to the big leagues and like people forget about winning. It was just like, oh, just play your game, whatever.
Yeah.
And then to the Red Sox, and that fire started again. And it was an awesome experience to talk about that every time. So from that moment on, my career completely changed because I'm going to every team. I'm thinking about, okay, how I'm going to win. How I'm gonna beat the other team every single time I seen it, and it just change your perspective of the game.
I'm sure like the teammates that you found in Boston are a big part of that. You too, like a lot of competitors on that team. I've heard you say before that you believe Pedro Martinez is the greatest pitcher of all time. Did you ever tell him you feel that way? Tell him how much you respect him.
All the time. I mean, I play a lot of poker. And my local poker rooms over here, and I probably answer that question every day. What's the best pitcher you ever face? I'm like, well, I'm gonna talk for me and for everybody else. It was Pedro Martinez. It was the most dominant pitcher we all have seen. I mean, yeah, you get your Randy Johnson, you get your Greg Maddux, you get your the Rocket, so many great pitchers, but the one guy that everybody was afraid when you were hitting was Pedro. And that's why one thing you don't want to have. You don't want to be fear. And he got that fear for everybody. and he was so smart. He wasn't just a powerful pitcher. He was just so smart. He can read you. He can see you moving in the box. And he can just, you know, move you from side to side and you'll be gone. You're gone in two, three pitches. You're just gone. You know, so so smart, such a unbelievable person. I always gonna have to give that credit. Now, you put Pedro in that way, but Chilling to me was another guy that was an unbelievable weapon, and it was extremely smart. Extremely smart. You know, he was always ahead of the hitter. Somebody comes to hit. He already has something. I'm going to start him like this. I'm going to do this. If he looked at me this way, I'm going to do this. And he got this green book with all the at-bats with everybody for the last freaking 15 years. Who does that? You know, Curt Schilling, another guy that was, to me, deserved to be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, pretty soon. Hopefully next year.
Yeah, he's still got a chance. We'll see. I know he probably hasn't helped himself. Right, and, oh, Joey's got him behind him. There you go. He's got the Schilling shot right there. And Pedro. He's got all the guys there. One question I have for you. So, obviously, we all remember the ALCS comeback in 2004. That's probably been – I was going to say it's been talked about too much, but it makes me happy. I'm sure it makes you happy every time you hear it. One thing for you, and I'm trying to find this clip. I feel like you did like a boo-hoo and like put up like the seven fingers to the Yankee fans. I'm pretty sure it was in what, 4 days in October or something like that. First off, all-time thing. I love that. I love that, like feeding it back to the fans like, uh-oh, you got game seven coming. Uh-oh. Like that was – that seemed to sum up the vibe of your team after game six where it was like, oh, we got all the momentum. Y'all got nothing. What was that atmosphere like in Yankee Stadium? Because I think you were the perfect person to feed into it.
Yeah, it was. First, I couldn't believe after you getting beat down 19-3, 19-6, something like that. How do you let that go? How do you let that go? Right? How you let that see that team already down, and you don't feed up from that? I do. I always do. I used to play golf with three guys and I was beating them down and I was like, you down, I'm gonna keep down. Like you're not coming out of this, right? You have that. And I saw that in our faces when we won that first game that David won it with a home run. Then the next game, you know, he won it with a base hit. Everything just went like the other way. I'm like, wow. And then you can see the faces, you can see Jeter, you can see Rodriguez, you can see all those guys that were like just down. I'm like, oh my God, they done. You know, and then we come to New York and then we did that in the first game. And I'm like, and then I was doing that to two guys. I shouldn't done that. And I don't, you know, would tell anybody to do it in the field again. But it was two guys sitting with a silky suit, like they look like wise guys. I swear to God, you know, and they was yelling at me. And I was just like, seven games, you know, fine. They were next to the dugout, and I'm like, I'm probably gonna get security to take me to the hotel today or something. But you know, it was fun. It was just part of the atmosphere in that moment. Right after, I think that was a game with Alex. Hit the glove.
Yep. Slap the Arroyo. Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they were just done. They were just desperate. You know, it looked like fish out of the water, just flopping, you know. And you know, we were just so confident in that moment that it was over. It was over, but we had still a lot of work to do, you know.
I just love that you did the it's subtle, but just putting up seven is the ultimate like, uh-oh, y'all in trouble, which I think was the perfect thing to do. And that, because the fans were, I mean, they were crazy. That old Yankee Stadium was different than the new one. They're on top of you. That was a different kind of atmosphere. I know you mentioned David, and we just got back from Cooperstown for the induction. What made Poppy different in terms of you've been with a lot of great hitters. What made it different to have David Ortiz as a teammate?
You know, I know David since Dominican Summer League. We played, he was with Seattle. I was with Montreal. We played against each other. And I know him well because it was three Colombian guys playing in that team with him. And it was another kid with him. They used to call him the Twin Towers. I forgot the name of the other kid. It was an outfielder. They were so big. Mm. But the thing with him was that he knew how to hit, right? He knew he wasn't just a big guy. He knew to, like, hit the ball to left field, you know, how to get a base hit, you know, curveballs, go the other way. He wasn't just like a power hitter. And then he got traded. We're in single A. We started in single A in 97, both of us. He's in Minnesota. I'm in Montreal. We both. From single A made it to the big leagues. We're the only two players that did that year. And he just a hitting machine. But then you go back to his numbers, And it's just like the clutch was just impressive. You know, when he hit that home run, when did he hit that double? When? And it was just always like seven innings up, seven, eight, nine innings. It's just like you could not pitch him. Because if the game is on the line, you're in trouble. You just, and then the one thing was some of the teams that couldn't afford to walk him because then you have Manny Ramirez behind him.
Yep. You know?
But that's what to us was so impressive, that he was such a clutch hitter. He sees the pitch and he's just going to hurt you. You can't escape.
Can't escape. Yeah, that's probably the best way to put it. Can't escape, especially with Manny sitting there in the on deck circles, like, we got to pitch this guy. You guys win the World Series. It was like the greatest day of our lives, and I'm sure yours as well. What was that parade like? What was the highlight from that parade in Boston?
The 4.5 million people. I can never, and it was cold, but yeah. I get that everybody gets the cold. It wasn't that cold. For me, it was freezing. For everybody, it was just like short t-shirt, but that much people, I never seen that much people. It was incredible. It was incredible. Everybody was in it. Everybody was into it. It just like people crying, the signs, you know, my dad haven't seen this since, you know, he was born in 1918, like stuff like that. It was just like, it was so powerful, so powerful. You know, it gets you back there and you're like, man, I wish I would have, you know, I wish I could have stayed in this town for the rest of my career, but you know, it couldn't, you know, it didn't happen. But I was always happy. It was always great to come back and play here. Always.
Yeah. I mean, 2004 is, Steve said it, like the greatest day of our lives. Like, that team is like the Red Sox team in my head. Like, the chemistry you guys had was great. And when I think of you on that Red Sox team, one of the first things that comes to mind is like, or one of the things that reminds me of your role with that team, I guess, is like when I see guys today doing like the crazy handshakes, they feel like they have like these multiple like personal handshakes with their teammates. Yeah. How and when did you start doing those? And did you have a different one with every guy on that team?
I had it with Montreal. I had it with a couple of guys in Montreal. Then I came here and I remember I started with Manny. So I did something with Manny, Milari, and then Milari was like, I want one. I want one of those. I'm like, all right, let's do one. And then like everybody was asking me to get a heat shake. So I got to go back home and I'm like, all right, I got to make this one here, this one there. And I'm like writing things down and you know, everyone. And then one day, Francona goes, where's my handshake? And I'm like, all right, I gotta do something with you. So I did something with him and like, we're winning and winning. And he's so superstitious, he's crazy. So every time before the game, he was just going crazy looking for me to do the handshake. And I'm like, Terry, don't worry about it. We're going to win. No. We got to do it here in this place. And we have to do it every day in the same place. And it was great because it was, for me, a way to connect with everybody. You know, everybody accepted me the way I was. And that's the part that I like. I worked my job the way I wanted to work it, and it worked.
All right, so this is the last one before we do a trivia question, and then we'll get you out of here. What's your baseball life like now? How involved are you with the game?
So I have a foundation called Prosper Sport Colombia, and we have an academy that gets kids at 12 and 13 years old and develop these kids in order to sign professional when they're 16 in the national draft, national market. I'm sorry, the national market. So far, it's been open since 2014. Because I had it before and I closed it down and then I opened up in 14. We signed over 30 players already. Some of them, couple of kids playing the big leagues for a really short time, couple of pitchers. And then we have a bunch of kids in the minor leagues right now. We got a couple of prospects, a couple of pitchers. Unfortunately, never signed a player with the Red Sox, but they scouted everywhere. We have the biggest prospect is one with Seattle right now. It's in Dominican Republic. It's one of those quick players. They're going to get to the big leagues, 19, 20. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable player, unbelievable hitter. But yeah, that's what we do right now. That's as much as me being inside professional baseball.
That's awesome. I love hearing that. Orlando, we will get you out of here on this. We always ask anyone we interview a trivia question about themselves. So the question we have about you is that you played in 14 postseason games with the Red Sox. How many of those games did you have at least one hit?
14, 13.
12. You almost had it. It's 12 out of 14. That's very impressive.
All right.
But Orlando, hey, thank you for doing this, man. Really appreciate you doing this, and it's great to talk to you.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care, man.
You too.
All righty. Big thanks to Orlando Cabrera for that interview. Joey, what was your favorite part? I had a favorite part. What was your favorite part?
My favorite part was probably just him throwing around towns in New Hampshire when me and him got to have a little moment. That was probably the best part. I will say, dude, I'm a little remiss. I regret the fact that I didn't say, like, all right, I'll catch you Sunday at Hampton Beach for some beach volleyball. I'll catch you there. But I'll just surprise him. I'll meet him there.
Yeah, just surprise him. Like, yeah. Hey, man.
What was your favorite part?
It's me. The Nomar talk, which is the least surprising thing of all time. But I think it was a cool answer of him to be like, yeah, I love Nomar too. Like, we all love Nomar. Like, he was the best. So it's just you forget. One thing I frequently forget is that these players have favorite players. Like, you think that since you're in the league, like, nah, you're so cool. You're playing. But it's like, no, they still watched guys growing up and they still have favorite players, and Orlando and Nomar are like the same age, so it's not like, you know, Cabrera was like a rookie when he got dealt to the Sox, but I understand that if you're that was the best line I think he had was when Red Sox players told him welcome to the big leagues when he got traded to the Red Sox. He played 8 years for the Expos. Like, welcome to the big leagues. I thought that was interesting, but
yeah, that was crazy when he was like, wait, no, I'm going to Boston to play shortstop.
Yeah, so like, they have
what happened? What happened?
Yeah, is Nomar dead? Like, what's going on? So that was cool. That was a fun interview. I think that was the right amount of a trip down memory lane. It always gets me so excited when we can talk to people that had like real impact on the 04 team. That's always going to be fun. And Joey, our goal now has to be to interview the whole team. It's got to be to check all these guys off. So we got two down, and I'm talking, let's say postseason roster, right? Well, I think we'll stick with postseason. That's fair. 25 man roster. Mm-hmm. We got two down, 23 to go. That's where we're
at. Episode 43, check off two guys. Sorry, just because we didn't throw out a name here for episode 43, as we usually do. I just think it's worth kind of mentioning. Eckersley, Jalen Davis.
Of course.
Fernando Abad, Garrett Richards,
your buddy,
Patrick Light.
Oh, no, not Pat Light. Oh, no. Not Pat Light. No.
Alan Embry. How about Alan Embry? We'll go with the Alan Embry episode. Stick with 04.
That's a lot better. A lot more talented on and off the field. Let's say it's obviously the Jalen Davis of all those guys, impact on the Red Sox and on the team. It's Jalen Davis. So
they, beginning of this Royals game here, they were like, Jalen Davis is hitting 375. I'm like, he's hitting 6 for 16. Let's say what it is.
Let's not lie here. I'm excited for the series recap, Joey, because I feel like I'm counting the numbers down and it's like, there's not that many games left. Like, 56 is not much after this series. It's 52, and you just start playing the numbers game. I do love it. My entire life I have always loved the wild card scoreboard watching. It's I'm living and dying on looking at game day. I mean, I have the MLB package, which is probably put the games on, but like looking at White Sox scores, you know, on game day on the MLB app. It's crazy. But
yeah, I think when it gets a little bit closer, I'm going to give this as a tip to people who have the MLB package. Okay. When it gets closer, go to Best Buy or go to like Facebook Marketplace or something. Go somewhere cheap and just get like 4 or 5 crappy TVs.
Yeah.
And then just get like 4 or 5 little Rokus, $200-$300 all said and done. You get like a 4 or 5 TV setup. Like really get down on Wild Card Weekend or Wild Card Weekend. Jesus.
Wild Card Weekend. That sounds awesome.
I literally was trying to like, I was thinking about like, yeah, it's like football. It's like, you know,
yeah.
When you get down to the wire and all the games are at the same time, but it's that over and over and over again. It's, I would prefer to not have to stress about it. I'll say that, but I think
Joey, we got exactly 2 months of this now. We got exactly 2 months of this. It's 2 months of Wild Card scoreboard watching. So I'm ready. I'm sure you're ready as well, but it's, my goodness, it is stressful. I will say that it is stressful. Just the first reactions to seeing Hosmer in a Red Sox jersey, you were totally right. He looks like he's played for them for 8 years. he literally looks like a Red Sox veteran. It was a funny thing. Well, we'll save more of the Hosmer talk for after the series, but I think it was funny to see him like tipping the cap. He hadn't faced one pitch as a member of the Red Sox, and he's tipping his cap with the Red Sox uniform on to the Royals fans. It's more not his fault. It's more just kind of a funny baseball thing. But
also kind of funny that he was tipping his cap and like 60% of people were standing.
Yeah, it was weird ovation. Well, I think
It was like, stand up for him, would you please?
I think it would have been different if it was with the Padres. The circumstances are a little awkward where it's like he just denied a trade to somebody and then the Sox scooped him, and I'm sure Royals fans don't like the Red Sox. A lot of times they go there and just beat up on the Royals. So it's an interesting dynamic. But yeah, that'll do it for the Orlando Cabrera interview. That was a ton of fun. Shout out to Orlando. And we got more player interviews coming up. The next you'll hear from Joey and I is after this Royals series. We got another cool interview next week that is somebody that I respect a lot. And if you guys listen closely to the show, Joey and I love this guy. This is one of our favorite Red Sox people. That's very, very fair to say.
Oh, yeah. We bring him up almost every episode.
Yeah, I say he's awesome like every show. So put the pieces together. I think you'll be able to figure
out. Maybe another interview right behind that.
Yeah. Hey, maybe.
Maybe a big one.
I mean, maybe the biggest interview in this show's 1 year history is coming up next
week.
So get excited.
Undoubtedly, yeah.
Yeah, I would say it's between two people, but this guy might be the top one. So until then, for Joey Capone, I am Steve Perrault. Go Sox, kid.
Inside the Monster is a production of Odyssey in partnership with the Boston Red Sox. The show is produced by me, Steve Perrault. Our executive producer is Lena Glazer. Mixing and video editing by Joey Capone. Special thanks to the Red Sox and Major League Baseball for their contributions to the production of this podcast.